Hello, and welcome to Your Holistic Health on WRRS, Radio Reading Services in Cincinnati. I'm Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, Holistic Clinical Pharmacist of RX Integrative Solutions, and your host for today's program. We're so glad that you could join us. Your Holistic Health brings you the latest in practical health information and health tips that help you stay safe, give you support, and bring you a message of hope. Today's guest is Olivia Edig, board-certified music therapist from Dayton, Ohio, who will be talking with us about music therapy. But first, a few items in the news. Tis the season for pesticides and produce. Pesticides are substances for controlling insects, weeds, or disease-causing organisms. Is organic produce pesticide-free, you might ask? Well, agricultural products certified have to be produced in compliance with the National Organic Program of the USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service. But they're not necessarily pesticide-free. The pesticides that are allowed for organic food production are typically not man-made, and they tend to be natural substances like soaps, lime sulfur, and hydrogen peroxide as ingredients. Nearly 70% of non-organic produce sold in the United States contains pesticide residues, but it's important to eat lots of fruits and vegetables for fiber and antioxidant value. What should we do? Choose organic, fresh, locally grown produce whenever possible. Or you might think about buying the frozen version of organic if you don't want to waste fresh. What produce is the worst and best to buy in terms of pesticide content? Well, the worst are called the Dirty Dozen. And that list has been released by the Environmental Working Group every year. It includes at the top, unfortunately, one of my favorites, strawberries. And others on this Dirty Dozen list, spinach, kale, apples, grapes, peaches, bell peppers, tomatoes, and celery, to name a few. The Clean 15 list for 2021 includes the good guys: avocados, corn, pineapple, onions, papaya, frozen peas, eggplant, broccoli, cabbage, kiwi, and cauliflower. Oops, and cantaloupes too. According to the Center for Science and the Environment, washing fruits and vegetables with 2% of salt water will remove most of contact pesticide residues that normally appear on the surface of fruits and veggies. But almost 75 to 80% of pesticide residues can be removed simply by washing with cold water. How about that? So it's not as hard as we think. And do remember to eat fruits and vegetables for health. Next, here's a quiz question. What do burrito wraps and sleep have in common? Well, the answer is not food. Rather, wrapping oneself in a blanket like a burrito is an exercise to calm you down if you feel stressed. And here's how you do it. Grab a blanket, wrap yourself up or roll yourself in it like a burrito. Make sure your arms feel tucked in and snug, and then sit or lie down and slowly breathe in deeply, breathing into your belly with your tongue on the roof of your mouth. This exercise mimics swaddling for babies, which is done by their parents to eliminate anxiety, regulate the baby's temperature, and help the baby self-soothe. Think of this as adult swaddling, as a novel way for your stress reduction. Be sure you can safely unwrap or have someone close by who can help you untangle if necessary. And finally, news about love, leadership, and empathy in the workplace. Good leaders have empathy for their employees and for one another. Empathy is putting ourselves in someone else's shoes to better understand their view of the world. Empathy makes the people who receive it feel seen, giving them a sense that they matter, that how they feel makes a difference to the empathizer. Employees who feel valued want to work for their managers that care about them. It's human nature. And when it comes to the survival of personal relationships, no matter how much love there is between you and your partner, there's no guarantee that you both will be able to empathize with each other, even if you think you're soulmates. Without empathy, the love in your relationship will end up like love as in tennis, a big zero. So successful love and leadership have a common thread with empathy. Now to our three health tips for the week. The first is about long walks that will change your life. And this is according to Daniel Goleman, the father of emotional intelligence, and it's from about a year ago. Whenever we walk in the woods, it feels as if we have entered a sanctuary. Everything we think matters does not seem to matter all that much under the shelter of the trees. Wild woodlands are a fascinating reminder of what nature was like before the dawn of humanity. Our tip number one, walk more in nature. Every walk is an opportunity to see new sights, to hear new sounds, to use all your five senses to experience and grow your creative life to the fullest. In nature, you can leave your worries and cares behind. Health tip number two comes from the Xavier University Well-Being Program. It's about spiritual well-being. If you are new to exploring spiritual well-being, your first question might be, where do I start? Tips for the day? Think about what your purpose and values are, and if they align with your current behaviors. Discover what gives your life meaning, and think about how to add more of that special sauce into your daily routine. Develop mindfulness, intentionally focusing on the present moment without judgment, but rather with curiosity and acceptance. Go on a contemplative walk and reflect on what has been going well and what has been challenging. Take time to revel in the beauty of the outside world. Be thankful for your blessings. And our final health tip for the day has to do with eye strain relief. We know that the act of blinking lubricates our eyes. That sounds pretty important. The recent COVID lockdown has caused a lot of eye strain from too much zooming. Turns out that when we are using technology, we forget to blink. Dryness in the cornea can lead to all kinds of problems, including burning, itching, tearing, a feeling of pressure behind the eyes, and even contact lens intolerance. Staring at screens could also lead to computer vision syndrome, also referred to as digital eye strain. This is a group of eye and vision-related problems that result from prolonged computer, tablet, e-reader, and cell phone use. And the tip for the day? Take vision breaks every half hour to an hour and look away from all those screens. And if you feel that you're still having a need to visit with your ophthalmologist, make sure you make that office appointment soon. Now it's time to introduce our guest. Olivia Edig is a board-certified music therapist in Dayton, Ohio. She received her BA in music from Concordia University, Nebraska, and her BS in music therapy from Indiana Purdue Fort Wayne. She has provided music therapy services in hospice and is currently the music therapy group leader for individual sessions and groups in assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory care units. Welcome, Olivia, to Your Holistic Health.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm glad to be here with you this morning.
Well, you know what? I just simply cannot imagine a world without music. But
Me neither.
So I would love to know when and where and maybe how music therapy got started in the United States?
Sure. So music and the ideas of the healing qualities of music have been around really since Aristotle and Plato. But the profession of music therapy formally got started after World War I and World War II, when musicians went into veterans' hospitals to support the veterans there who were suffering from the after effects of war. The veteran patients they were working with displayed significant responses to the music, and that led the doctors and nurses to request the hiring of musicians in those hospitals. And the first college programs were also developed in the 40s, with Michigan State University being the first. I became interested in music therapy while I was studying music education. And in my schooling, I really grew to appreciate the relational elements of music and making music with other people rather than the performance elements and educational elements. And that led me to pursue more of a music therapy route.
So each music therapist has to have some sort of specialized training in a musical instrument, right?
Yes. Yep.
And so what kind of degrees are needed then on top of that?
Sure. So in addition to music therapy coursework, we all have a 4-year bachelor's degree in music therapy. And there are over 80 schools in the nation that are approved by the American Music Therapy Association that we can pursue those degrees at. And the curriculum for music therapy focuses on musical foundations, which focuses on that instrument that you're talking about. There are clinical foundations and then music therapy foundations and principles, and those are found in the AMTA professional competencies that we all provide practice based on. In addition to our coursework, we also do 1,200 hours, of clinical training, and that includes a 900-hour supervised internship. So there's quite a bit that goes into a music therapy degree.
Do you have psychology courses in that training?
We do. Yep.
Tell us a little bit more about those.
It kind of varies from school to school. Some schools have more of a psychology intensive look at music therapy. Others are more focused on other elements of music therapy. But the typical psychology, sociology, those types of classes. Does that make sense?
It does. So
yeah.
Pulling all that wonderful training together, what's the actual role of a music therapist with their patient?
Sure. I believe that this varies greatly depending on the population and setting that a music therapist works in, but there are certain things that we all are responsible for. And that would be things like accepting referrals, collaborating with a treatment team to develop a treatment plan with very individualized goals and objectives for the client. And then our specific job would be to develop those specific music therapy approaches and interventions that are used to address those goals. A music therapist consistently and continuously assesses the client as they work with them. And that's a really important part of our treatment, is that we can modify the treatment plan as necessary and document changes in progress that are made in treatment. I would add, in addition to those things, my role here, specific to this setting, would be providing comfort, providing support, creating social interactions and opportunities for all kinds of expression.
So do you get your patients, clients, by referral from physicians, by a written order, or how does that system work?
Mm-hmm. I often get referrals from our IDT team, which includes people like social workers, life enrichment coordinators, nurses, physicians. Anybody can refer somebody to me. I get referrals from family members. And again, that would look different from setting to setting, but that's who I often work with here in this setting.
It sounds like a very rewarding career.
So rewarding.
So kind of along the same lines, I would imagine that you're a trusted professional, and building trust is extremely important between you and your client, and trying to get to know enough about your client to figure out what element of music therapy to pursue. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I I think adding the music element to therapy even requires more trust than other therapies, because music can be such a vulnerable experience. Even outside of music therapy, music brings up emotions. We hear a song on the radio and it can make us cry, or incredibly happy, or even angry. And I think making that music together really requires trust, so that that person feels safe with me and we can explore those things together.
So from the very beginning, you're both engaged in, I guess, playing an instrument or discussing composing a selection or listening to a selection or participating, as in a choir, all of those perhaps and more are different elements, right?
Absolutely.
What's your favorite?
You know, I really enjoy songwriting. It's so fun to see the different ideas that people have. Maybe it's about different foods that we like, and we can write a whole song about food, and it's just such a fun experience to hear their ideas.
Well, I'd love to tell our public, and I'm sure it's okay with you, that I've heard you sing. You have a beautiful voice, and it's very engaging. I'm sure that your clients love that, and I bet you do a lot of singing with them.
We do. Singing is a huge part of what I do, a huge part.
So how is music therapy different from, let's just say, listening to our favorite musical genre for pleasure and for healing?
Sure. I had mentioned what drew me to music therapy was the relational element of music making, and I really think that's the most important difference. I think there are a lot of differences, but I think the key thing is that in music therapy, there's a relationship between not only the client and the music, but the therapist, client, and the music. And this creates that therapeutic space that we're looking for. And then the therapist incorporates the treatment for those individualized goals and objectives that are specific to each client we work with.
So without a lot of detail, can you give us maybe one or two examples of the type of healing that you're, or the outcome goals, we'll say, that you're trying to achieve for some of your clients?
Sure. I think in the setting I work in, social interaction is a big goal that I work towards, especially in the hard times we've gone through with COVID. You know, they've been so closed off from their family, and creating that social interaction through music is a huge thing that we can offer to them. Emotional expression is another thing I look for. And oftentimes working with the elderly, just creating a relaxing space for them is something I often try to do.
That sounds great. And I'm sure families, as well as your clients, appreciate all of what you're doing. Does music therapy target a wide range of clinical populations, or we'll call them maybe indications, or a more narrow range in terms of, you know, reason for being as well as client age?
Absolutely. You know, I looked up on the American Music Therapy Association this list because I wanted to make sure I had it right. The American Music Therapy Association website lists 34 different populations that we work with, all the way from labor and delivery to Alzheimer's disease and everything in between. So really, everyone could be indicated for music therapy at some point in their life.
Well, it's music for the life journey, Olivia.
Absolutely, yes.
So what are some specific examples? We started to get into it earlier, but more information on specific types of interventions that you are using with your clients or have used over the years of your training.
Yeah, so some interventions that I use on a day-to-day basis where I'm currently working are moving to music to improve or maintain fine and gross motor skills, engaging in therapeutic singing to improve or maintain breath control, and also to encourage reminiscent conversations. I mentioned the songwriting, and that encourages creative and emotional expression. And we also do a lot of improvisation with various instruments, whether it's tone chimes or percussion instruments. And we often use that to encourage those social interactions I mentioned.
Ooh, improvisation sounds scary.
Yeah.
How do you get trust for that?
That's an excellent question. I think a lot of it has to do with facilitating it confidently, and being real with people, you know. I think being comfortable with being silly or making mistakes myself makes me seem real to them. At least that's my hope. And letting them know that it doesn't have to sound perfect or there's not a right way to do it. It's about how you want to do it and how you're comfortable doing it.
It almost sounds fun to me, although I'm one of the scaredy cats. But I'm really impressed with the value of, you know, and the power with regard to some of these interventions, and not just for improv, but again, the very specific ways and multiple ways that you can reach people who, with other means, even medications perhaps, can't even be reached. And you know what? I'm thinking about, you mentioned a couple of these, but Alzheimer's patients, Parkinson's, stroke. You know, I spend a good deal in my professional career trying to help people, you know, use less medications, not more. And we are, you know, in a country where we're probably over-medicated to begin with, wouldn't it be wonderful if music could be the first and maybe a lasting intervention to help reduce the amount of prescription meds that are being used in a lot of our seniors, for example?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's the idea.
And you think maybe that's why I had you as a guest on my show, so that we can promote that?
I love that idea.
Truth be told. So where are music therapy programs? Let's just zone in on the Dayton and Cincinnati areas right now.
Sure. Both Cincinnati and Dayton Children's Hospitals have excellent music therapy programs. There are several hospices in the area that have a music therapist on staff, including Hospice of Dayton. Bethany Village has a music therapist. And there are many, many private practice music therapy companies in Southwest Ohio and other places in Ohio, but private practices might do contracts with schools or with nursing homes or with individuals who need music therapy services.
All right. Well, great. I'm glad to hear that it's booming in the area.
Yes.
And you would expect that because we're a large metropolitan community collectively. I've got a couple of other ideas. I understand that the University of Cincinnati is a program that's partnered with The Well. So this is their integrative health and medicine program with The Well. And they've launched a custom version of The Well's Mindful Music Moments program. And this is, I'm told, a type of mindful music therapy. It's for associates, their patients, and their caregivers at the University of Cincinnati Gardner Neuroscience Institute's, get this, multiple sclerosis infusion suite and waiting rooms. Who knew?
I had not heard of that one, but that's excellent.
So I'm thrilled about that. And then stepping out of our area in Dayton and Cincinnati and zoning in northward to Ada, Ohio, my buddies at the Ohio Northern College of Pharmacy are working with one of the local Ada nursing homes and bringing music therapy to them successfully. And we've
seen
a couple of updates as one of their alum. I'm privy to that information and really am impressed and proud to say that pharmacists can be involved in these programs as well. So maybe,
absolutely,
Olivia, you've got some budding proteges coming about up in Ohio Northern.
I sure hope so.
So are there any research studies, or let's just point to maybe a place where listeners that are interested in some information on research in music therapy might be able to go?
Sure. The American Music Therapy Association actually publishes two journals, the Journal of Music Therapy and Music Therapy Perspectives, and there is constantly research going on. I receive probably 3 or 4 emails throughout the year asking to participate in research studies. So there's a ton of research going on, and I would suggest those articles as places to look. The American Music Therapy Association website would probably have some articles to read too.
Okay, two great good references. Let's throw in a third. I was just thinking about the National Institutes of Health, and listeners, if you want to jot this down, it's clinicaltrials.gov. So again, that's clinical trials with an S on the end. That's all one word, clinicaltrials.gov. And the way you use that is you search clinical trials with music therapy and then whatever indication you're looking for. So, Olivia, we're just about out of time. Let me tell you one thing. I think you're cool, and what you're doing is the best. As a fellow musician, you rock. So,
thank you.
Where can our listeners go for more information on music therapy?
So if you want to find more information about music therapy specifically in Ohio, there is an Association of Ohio Music Therapists website, which is AOMT, musictherapymt.org. And I have mentioned the American Music Therapy Association website, and there are excellent music therapy resources there. And that website is musictherapy.org.
All righty. Very good. Thanks so much for joining us today. And we're going to wrap up with a nice reading called The Raindrop from Carillon Park Print Shop, anonymous in Dayton, Ohio. A drop of rain is like a sudden knock at the door, unexpected yet often welcome with a smile. It can brighten your day or ruin your plans. It can make you laugh or make you sad. Whether the raindrop is moving fast or slow or is big or small, it always gets everyone's attention. A raindrop contains many secrets. It is a bubble of anticipation and surprise. It cleanses the earth, it feeds the flowers, and it fills the holes. The raindrop is never silent. It brings on the roof, spatters on the window, or splashes in a puddle. A raindrop. Well, it's time to wrap up our show. And again, this is Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, holistic clinical pharmacist of RX Integrated Solutions in Loveland, Ohio. Blessings for whole person health and healing. See you next time.